Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the 25th day of July, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Allen. Let's talk about what's going on around the nation and around the world. And since I didn't end up doing a show on Monday, apologies, but some local emergencies came up. There are a number of things that I would call small stories in a way, but in another sense, they're harbingers. And certainly on that score, they're not that small at all. Here's one of them. The nation of India has issued a ban on exports of rice. Seems like they understand there's a famine coming. India's seen them before. So why would you want to export food that your own people might need? And they've decided to cut it off. As a result, India's rice export ban, says the Daily Mail out of the UK, has triggered a buying panic, here's a shocker, at various U.S. supermarkets, causing the price of a 20-pound bag to surge from about $16 to almost $50 in some stores. The South Asian country accounts for some 40% of world rice exports, and they ordered a halt to its largest rice export category, non-basmati rice, on Thursday to calm their own domestic prices, and as a result, hey, it sparked fears of a global shortage. And surprise, folks, since it's been obvious for a while now that there is a global intent to cause a worldwide famine, that shouldn't surprise anybody that's been paying attention. Videos and reports shared on social media over the weekend showed Indian Americans in particular standing in long lines or panic buying rice all over the country, places like Texas, Michigan, New Jersey, Alabama, Ohio, Illinois, and, of course, the People's Republic of California, which ought to be used to communism. There are more details in the story, folks, but the main point is we've seen what's going on. Fires at food processing facilities. Attempts in places like the Netherlands to completely destroy and shut down their own agriculture industry. They want to kill all the cattle, destroy the ability to have fertilizers, and essentially make sure that ultimately people starve, whether they figured it out yet or not. And this is just one more clue. Here's another very telling indicator, and the fact that it didn't get much coverage is telling as well, but it was covered by Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s Children's Health Defense Organization and their defender. The U.S. House of Representatives last Wednesday voted down an amendment that would have reinstated the good pilots who knew better than to take the Zyklon B injection, but were fired for, in fact, not taking the COVID-19 not vaccine. The vote was 294 to 141, only 141 representatives, in other words, with even a modicum of intent. Integrity. And interestingly, 83 rhinos joined the far-left Democrats to sink the proposal. And, oh, maybe it had something to do with the fact that it was Marjorie Taylor Greene who introduced it. The amendment was to a Federal Aviation Administration reauthorization bill. And as Marjorie Taylor Greene told Fox Business News, hundreds of pilots were forced out of their livelihoods over the past several years for their refusal to take the COVID vaccine. They were denied medical freedom of choice to decide, which is absolutely true, folks, whether they should take the experimental Zyklon B injection, she said COVID vaccine, which is obviously a misnomer, or lose their job. The news comes, quote, when the transportation industry is stretched to the point of dysfunction, unquote, already, said Joshua Yoder, president of the U.S. Freedom Flyers Organization, who's opposed the mandate all along, especially since, if you pay attention, you know it was a violation of the FAA's own medical regulations. Said Yoder, pilots are essential to keeping the economy moving, and right there, folks, you know the answer. They don't want the economy to move. They want it to be destroyed. Pilots in the American public, though, he said, will continue to feel the negative effects of the unlawful mandate and the crippling policies of degenerative public-private partnerships. And as is evident by this vote, our country is being run by a uniparty, and it's time for the American people, he said, to put a stop to it. Bob Snow, a commercial pilot who took the Zyklon B injection under duress and then later suffered what so many have, related injuries, told the defender he believes the amendment was voted down out of spite. And I think there's a lot of truth in that, even if they don't necessarily agree on who or what the spite is directed at. But Snow also said, quote, I think there are a large number of elected representatives who supported the draconian COVID-19 measures enacted by various entities in the country and now feel the need to stick to their guns and ride the narrative, even though the measures ran the gamut from ineffective to outright criminal. And the Texas scorecard adds that members of Congress were, quote, pressured by the airline group and their lobbyists to vote against the amendment, arguing that the decision over rehiring those pilots should be left up to the individual airlines. Yeah, sure, folks. Just like the fascists always leave things up to the corporate entities that co-legislate with them. That way, each hand can blame the other. Remember, these same airlines received $25 billion in taxpayer bailouts as part of the COVID so-called CARES Act, the Coronavirus Aid Relief and Economic Security, what a misnomer bunch of BS, during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic, which was justified in part to keep airline workers employed, that is, if they would be good little slaves. Laura Cox, a pilot who helped found Airline Employees for Health Freedom, told Texas Scorecard that, quote, hundreds of airline employees, and not just pilots, were terminated at United Airlines if they were unsuccessful at navigating United's impersonal and discriminatory online system for obtaining a reasonable accommodation, unquote. And, yeah, Monica Dutcher, writing for The Defender, goes on to point out what your host has said as the real smoking gun when it comes to just about everything COVID over the last few years. And it's on top of what we often talk about when it comes to federal aviation medical regs. Federal law actually prohibits the mandating by employers of the vaccines distributed under emergency use authorization. Obviously, genocide trumps your rights, especially the right to life and to choose how you're going to end it or sustain it. The Defender also notes that documents have revealed the FAA strongly recommended pilots to receive the so-called COVID-19 vaccines under the EUA, despite the agency's own regulations that prohibit pilots from taking any medications or therapies that have been on the market in general distribution for 12 months or less. So in other words, folks, I'll say it again. They violated their own regulations, and if they tell you it's all about the health of the American public, you know they're lying through their damn teeth. That goes for the airlines, too. They don't really care whether or not you die in a crash. They just want to make darn sure that they're immune from liability for it. And if they get caught, they'll do exactly what they have been doing. They'll hide it, they'll lie about it, and they'll cover it up. And if you're not mad about it, you're not paying attention. By the way, if you have to get on a commercial carrier airplane or allowing those you love to do so in an environment like this, well, you're playing Russian roulette to boot. Sure, most people make it, but virtually none of them understand what's really going on. And since I'm certainly being critical of the public-private partners masquerading as airlines, this is important background. In January 2023, the story tells, a class action lawsuit was filed in the Circuit Court of Cook County, Illinois, Chicago area, against United Airlines by various furloughed and fired employees, including pilots, flight attendants, and mechanics, who alleged wrongful termination. United Airlines previously, in April, a year earlier, 2022, had fired 232 employees who refused to take their Cyclone B injection, and the plaintiffs alleged that the airline had, quote, used deception, discrimination, psychological manipulation, and physical isolation to, quote, force employees under threat of termination to participate in a dangerous social and medical experiment. They also alleged that they were harassed in an attempt to force them to, quote, submit to an injection of an unknown substance of, and this is an understatement now, isn't it? Questionable efficacy. Yeah, folks, that was back when it was still called a conspiracy theory by the liars in the mainstream media. Now we know it's negative efficacy, because you're far worse off if you buy into it and take the Zyklon B than if you simply said, hey, I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. I think I'll let my immune system survive. And that suit, even though it's still in its infancy when it comes to legal machinations, isn't even the first of its kind, triggered by the anti-constitutional, inhuman, and certainly in violation of all medical ethics, vaccine mandates. Quote, the continued downstream carnage, said Joshua Yoder, from the COVID-19 shots is not just leaving pilots unable to work while killing others. It's also still punishing those who chose not to take an unconstitutionally mandated experimental biologic by not allowing them to return to work after wrongful termination, unquote. And now Congress not only basically says F you to America, but they're telegraphing their move. They're going to do it again, folks. And don't you for a second expect otherwise. On then we go to the World War III front, which in a lot of respects turns out to be another manifestation of the very same attitude. We'll start with this piece. I've seen it in several places at this point. A gigantic explosion took place over the weekend at the Shangfang military base in Taiwan, where authorities described the event as a, quote, Chinese sabotage in advance of invasion. The situation is certainly volatile, and a number of people are said to be dead and injured. And the ammunition dump that was destroyed turns out to have been the primary ammo supply for Taiwan's military, which means if China decides to take advantage of the Biden Führer's incompetence, and maybe the fact that he's obviously bought and paid for, Taiwan couldn't fight for much longer than a week before they'd run out of ammo and have to pull a Ukraine. And in the capital city of Taipei, the evidence is clear that people are terrified. Streets are literally empty, as if an air raid was taking place, which is certainly a very real possibility going forward. Not like they haven't been executing drills for quite a while anyway. The Gateway Pundit has more on World War III's Eastern Front. Russia, it says, has destroyed 15 Leopards, 20 Bradley fighting vehicles, all in 24 hours. This is as of the weekend. And large numbers of Western mercenaries have been eliminated as well, according to claims from Russian President Vladimir Putin via Russia Today. said Putin, quote, "We've never destroyed so much in one day," noting that the Ukrainian units were, quote, "fully equipped with foreign hardware." They also claim to have wiped out a large number of Western mercenaries acting in Ukraine, said to include Polish and German volunteers, and blamed their, quote, "stupidity." And how bad is it? Well, even the New York Times has admitted that the Ukrainian military has lost at least 20% of its battlefield equipment, of course, most of it supplied by U.S. taxpayers, in just the first 2 weeks of the so-called offensive. And the Western media is coming closer and closer to outright admitting it's been a disaster. Reports abound about how the West is alarmed at Ukraine's slow progress on the battlefield, and the Wall Street Journal claims that they were also jolted by the swift loss of armor. Your host can't help but note they don't seem to be nearly as jolted by the carnage among the Ukrainian people. Speaking of carnage, particularly that yet to come, there's another diversity hire in the Biden regime, and this one's ironic because it's even over the wishes of the so-called Secretary of Defense, well-known traitor Lloyd Austin, which seemed to raise some eyebrows at Zero Hedge because they suspect it's at least suspicious he would recommend a white male for any kind of such senior promotion. His pick, by the way, was a Top Gun graduate with all kinds of fighter experience, carrier landings and so forth, and combat command experience in war zones, Admiral Samuel Paparo. But casting aside that recommendation, says Zero Hedge, the Biden Fuhrer over the weekend nominated Admiral Lisa Franchetti to command the U.S. Navy. Arguably, for one real overriding reason. She would be the first woman to command a military branch and the first on the Joint Chiefs of Staff. The cynical summary, though, is certainly worth paying attention to, because it does hit home. Given that the Biden regime is so obsessed with diversity hires, writes Tyler Durden, Paparo's bid was likely doomed by the fact that he's a white male. And maybe if he wants to go further in this transgender Navy, he'd better consider, well, exactly that. Next time the top brass position comes open, they write, he'd better come out as trans. It certainly worked for far lesser lights. But maybe, folks, we're just leading up to the real issue here. The first story I'm going to look at comes from Yahoo News to set the stage. Russia and China, writes Jay Solomon for him, are stepping up joint military drills in Asia and the Pacific, and their moves are starting to alarm the Pentagram. Well, maybe the Pentagram is just excited about the fact that the end is coming. On Sunday, Beijing and Moscow, it says, completed a massive air and naval exercise in the Sea of Japan, including anti-submarine missions, sea and air escort training, and combat games, according to Communist Chinese state media. Leaders said that the practice runs were focused on safeguarding the region's maritime transportation, and that might be, they note, a mocking reference to the Biden regime and how they have tried to justify their own growing military presence in the South China Sea and Taiwan Strait. American defense officials, says Yahoo, are now gauging whether or not the communist Chinese and Russian militaries will look to running these sorts of exercises closer to Biden-run U.S. territory. And you got to ask, given what they're up to, why the heck wouldn't they? There's also concern that the Kremlin may be sharing battlefield data from the World War III front in Ukraine against U.S. and NATO defense systems with Biden's puppet masters in the CCP, said Admiral John Aquilino, commander of U.S. forces in the Indo-Pacific last week. As it goes into the Pacific, they've amplified and increased their amount of joint training, joint exercises, and joint demonstrations, he said. I only see the cooperation getting stronger, and boy, that's concerning. That's a dangerous world. But I think this seems to be the real crux of the matter, folks. I saw a piece from Vox Day on his website, and he has a pretty decent track record as a military analyst, who writes that after 80 years, the United States Navy is no longer the dominant naval power on planet Earth. And here he quotes Russia Today, and their slant on the story I just reviewed, saying Moscow and Beijing have conducted large-scale naval drills in the Sea of Japan this week. According to a statement from the Russian Pacific Fleet over the weekend, the three-day exercise involved a wide range of activities, including joint firing drills, a simulated naval battle, and air defense training. It's called North Cooperation 2023. The exercise was held from January 20th to the 23rd, said the Press Fleet Service, and it involved two Russian anti-submarine war frigates, two Chinese destroyers, along with a pair of Russian corvettes and Chinese guard ships, alongside a bevy of support vessels, and in total, 30 aircraft from both nations. And the point was to strengthen the naval cooperation between the Russian Federation and the People's Republic of China, they said, as well as maintaining peace and stability. Does that sound familiar? In the Asia-Pacific region. And says Vox Day, this is significant because it's yet another signal that the Russians and Chinese are now confident that their combined naval power rivals that of the United States, especially given the, your host has to add here, dumbed down, politically correct, and now turbo-tranny U.S. military, especially the Navy. Says Vox Day, I don't think it'll be too long now before China announces that the South China Sea and Taiwan Straits are off limits and dares the USA to challenge that ban. Expect the U.S. Navy to subsequently back down, he says, after mumbling some meaningless phrases about the freedom of the seas. The key is that the United States Navy now has fewer ships than the Chinese People's Navy, the PLN, while it has the advantage of more experience, which they're rapidly destroying and undermining, better quality ships, and more of the aircraft carriers that have been the heart of naval power since 1941. The latest reason he makes this suggestion is twofold. First, as we've seen in Ukraine, air power is now vulnerable to air defense systems to a much greater extent than ever before. Any airstrike from a carrier against a first-tier military target is likely to lose more than half of the planes that it tries to launch. And more importantly, secondly, China can rapidly replace its naval losses in the event of a war, while the USA, and this should surprise nobody, folks, cannot. And consider, for just one example of what he's talking about, just what's been done to America's steel and energy industries. And that's without trying to acknowledge the importance of so-called rare earth metals. In fact, he writes, China's shipbuilding advantage over the USA now even exceeds the historic advantage that the USA once enjoyed over Japan back in World War II by a considerable margin. He goes on with a whole bunch of data about numbers of shipping tonnage and aircraft produced, and says that while it might be theoretically possible for the U.S. to significantly expand its industrial capacity in order to reduce this disadvantage, the political, ideological, and demographic realities that are now in place render that improbable to the point of near impossibility. Not only is the gutting just about complete, but because the fascist U.S. public-private partnership and its commitment to diversity, inclusion, and equality is actively reducing its current capabilities, which means there's basically no way they can be reasonably expected to expand them, not only successfully, but perhaps ever again. And sadly, says Vox Day, while he thought that the end of U.S. naval dominance would be the consequence of some Sicilian expedition resulting in the unexpected sinking of a couple of aircraft carriers, thanks to Ukraine and the offshoring of U.S. industrial capacity, it looks like we've passed that historic point without any fireworks. Unless maybe you count a few drag shows on U.S. naval ships. One more story that's at least peripherally related. This comes from Jim Hoft and the Gateway Pundit. The Biden Fuhrer, they say, has created a new permanent Office of Pandemic Preparedness and Response Policy and laid the foundation for a new round of medical martial law. Tell me it isn't so. And here he quotes Leo Holman up front, noting that Americans may again be duped into complying with high-pressure masking, groupthink, forced lockdowns, and repeated mRNA jabs. Maybe they'll change the name of the thing that it's supposed to prevent this time. Anyway, last week, Friday, July 21, it says, the Biden regime quietly announced the creation of that new permanent office, which the White House called the Office of Pandemic Preparedness. Yep, they spelled it wrong. And Response Policy, or OPPR. And Biden named a military man, retired Air Force Major General Paul Friedrichs, to head up the new office. And by emphasizing that it will be permanent, the regime has issued a red flag that ought to have our keen attention, both of them right. Is government still punch drunk with the new powers obtained from the last pandemic and telegraphing to us plebiscites that yet another one is right around the corner? Well, hey, if you saw Congress and what they're doing, I think it's hard to deny that. The significance of the step by the Biden Fuhrer last Friday can't be fully and properly contextualized, says Holman, without going back into a little history dating back to pre-COVID-1984, maybe 2019 into 2020. You could go back further still and show how U.S. laws were changed in preparation for their massively hyped pandemic, but he says for the sake of space, I'll only go back the first few years. By spring 2020, whether we like the term or not, the U.S. went into a form of medical martial law. Here are quotes of May 15, 2020 press release from the Trump administration's Department of Defense, where the regime announced the appointment of General Gustav F. Perna as chief operating officer of, you know it, don't you, Operation Warp Speed, the regime's national program to accelerate the development, manufacturing, and distribution of COVID-19 vaccines, therapeutics, and diagnostics, a.k.a. medical countermeasures. And as they say, the rest is history. Militaries, of course, are built to mobilize for war. This was no different. And the war about to be waged looks like it's going to be, again, against the American people. And you can expect that we've already seen the weapons. Another fierce propaganda campaign to prepare the battlefield, followed by a massive effort to inject that bioweapon directly into the bodies of every man, woman, and child, down to 6 months of age, if not earlier. That is, if they survive to 6 months of age nowadays. You've seen it. The regime waged the war for 2 full years, plus get a shot, get another, and another, and another. Hey! They paid you to get it. They threatened you with loss of job, loss of rights to travel, assemble, health care, loss of basically everything. And the only thing they didn't tell you were going to lose was your immune system and ultimately your life. When has that ever happened before? And remember, folks, in the name of safety, they ignored safety regs and even went out of their way to poison pilots, mechanics, and just about everybody else that might, in fact, if they died on the job, take a whole lot of people along with them. And we saw carnage on the highways, too, in the form of what came to be labeled as vaccidents. And here he points back to the Biden's infamous red speech, in which the Fuhrer threatened any Americans who dared oppose his policies on COVID, not vaccines, and other issues, while flanked by 2 U.S. Marines. Yep, everybody got it. The symbolic message was unmistakable. And Achtung. And now that things have at least started to look like they might return to normal, the regime is getting ready for what follows next by creating this new OPPR. Doctors, as you know, have been forced to violate their medical oath to first do no harm, and that certainly explains why so many of them don't even bother to take it anymore. And only under a situation of medical martial law could we get from where we were to where we still are. All the laws and procedures meant to protect people were waived, as they have been from 2021 onward. So fast forward to July 21 this year, 2023. The aforementioned military op was obviously so successful that the Biden Fuhrer is now making it permanent and taking it to the next level. Friedrichs himself, and I'll skip over some of the disgusting bio here, but is a man who's right up there. They're right with General Marxist Milley and Lloyd Austin in terms of his ability to rise up the ranks of what now passes for the U.S. military. Guys like Milley, Austin, and Friedrichs, says the piece, are essentially globalist military bureaucrats who get promoted up the ladder by kissing the right backsides, not because they're particularly brilliant or even wise. And yep, we know it. That's how the process works in Washington. And your host has already noted at length and for years now that if you do serve the God of the Bible and put him first, and even understand what the concept of the Constitution and enemies foreign and domestic once meant, well, you know, don't let the door hit you in the you-know-what on the way out. Many have pointed out what happened under the Obama regime, that is, the first 2 terms of the O'Biden regime, where over 300 flag-ranked officers were shown that door. But, hey, we've already got the Centers for Death and Control, the Department of Achtung, Health and Human Services, and a whole bunch of other three-letter agencies. Why do we need yet another biomedical security office run this time by the U.S. military, which has already demonstrated their intent to kill soldiers, sailors, pilots, and Marines? Homan reminds us that back in early 2022, the evil Bill Gates told CNBC that, quote, we'll have another pandemic. Oops, he said pandemic. It'll just be a different pathogen this time. So, yeah, how does he know? It's been 100 years since the Spanish flu. Why is he so certain the next one's imminent and it'll be a different pathogen? Well, says Homan, it's no coincidence. Most countries are now rolling out their digital IDs, precursor to the mark of the beast, central bank digital currencies, and some, like Ethiopia, are already spotlighting the year 2025 is when these changes will be fully operational and mandated. So think of the possibilities when the next pandemic hits, if it's the fall or summer of 2024, and it just gets worse into 2025 as the new selected replacement Fuhrer is installed into office. And by then, the global elite will have their new digital enforcement mechanism in place to lock people down that wasn't even available to them at the peak of the COVID pandemic back in 2020. The 2021 pandemic was a test run, arguably successful even beyond the wildest dreams of the globalists, at conditioning people to the coming world beast system. And you know they'll do an even better job next time around. More restrictions on speech, travel, religious assemblies, all purchases. More surveillance and, of course, more even deadlier, mandated mRNA injections. They're still continuing to prepare and grease the skids. So the question's not if, but when. And on that score, I mean, let's be real here, folks. I can't help but think we know the answer. And unfortunately, we're out of time for now. Thanks for joining us, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.